have a secret cream that I will say, in terms of mad cast high levels, a lot more legit than
Dr. Chart. Oh, sorry. We went there.
Yeah, well, because... Welcome back, everyone, to the Chemist Confessions podcast. I'm Gloria.
I'm Victoria.
This is a human conversation on all the skincare science we talk about on the daily. And yeah, I think I'm ready for today's episode.
We're back in plant stuff.
Yeah, but this is a good one. This is plant stuff with data.
Also why we're back in plant stuff.
Yep. So today we're talking about all things Centella Asiatica.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, this is what you might associate with, you know, like the Zika stuff. That's like all the rage, I think, 5 years ago.
We like this stuff.
Yeah, but the trend hasn't died down, and I feel like it's a rare occasion, but we feel like it's for good reason why the trend is still here.
Totally. So, we're just going to get right into it. What is the Zika stuff? What is Centella Asiatica?
Yep, this is an herb that kind of looks like a weed. It's like a clover, but without the leaves. They're not uncommon at all. They're grown over Asia and especially in more humid climates. Mm-hmm. And because they're very common, there's a lot of roots in using it in traditional medicine. Mm-hmm. I will say, side note, if you go to a Vietnamese restaurant, yes, sometimes they serve it as a drink. Do not get it without sugar.
I was going to say, if you get it without sugar, it's literally the definition of grass water.
Yeah,
I cannot. Yeah. But Adam, I try to be good on the sugar side. Mm-hmm. Adam hates when I order it that way. He's like, oh, no, none for me.
Yeah. It's pretty refreshing if you get it with sugar. So same thing. Yeah. There was one time I went and I was like, I should be better about my sugary drinks. No sugar for me. I got it. I was like, I might as well go grazing outside. That's what it tastes like.
But some of it's great. I've recently seen evolutions of this drink. I do want to put it out there where they now are putting it with coconut juice and coconut meat. Yum. It is so good.
Oh, that sounds so yummy.
If you find that, highly recommend for a healthier beverage. Yeah. Anyways.
But we digress.
We digress again.
In skincare, you will associate it with terms like Zika, anything, tiger grass type things. But generally speaking, there's actually a whole list of ingredients that's basically comes from Centella Asiatica.
A lot.
The main one's the extract.
Mm-hmm. You'll find things like Centella Asiatica extract. There's other, like we say about plant stuff, parts of the plant. So there's like Centella Asiatica flower, stem, leaf extract. But like all plant stuff, we love the isolates. We like the actual molecules that are linked to the properties, the skin benefits that you hear about. So we like things like metacasticide. That's actually one of our favorites.
Yeah, there's the main compounds that's isolated and identified in Centella Asiatica are metacasticide, metacasic acid, asiaticoside, asiatic acid. Sometimes you'll see it on your ingredient list along with the extract. Sometimes you only see extract, and all these things, all things Centella kind of became trendy because of a series of more animal models where they looked at it for wound healing. We'll put up a table here. There's a whole series of tests that dated back to like 99.
Yeah.
When they started looking at its potential to heal, to accelerate wound healing and kind of benefit in terms of anti-inflammation there. Yeah. You can see from the review paper that there's like a whole series of tests there. The good thing is it didn't stop there, right? We still, when we were putting together this episode, because the ingredient's really trendy, sometimes like they kind of just write off of these old data.
Yes.
That's may or may not be cosmetically relevant. But we do see that, you know, even though it has its roots in being an anti-inflammatory agent that helps in wounds, it's actually transformed a lot through the years in skincare.
I'm actually so glad you mentioned that, because that is exactly how metacasticide came into my life, was in the early stages of my chemist years. That was how it kind of entered onto my radar, and one of the things I had to look at was metacasticide. But the problem was, at the time, is all the data was in wound healing, so it felt like a extrapolation, because we always say, like, you know, wound healing sounds like a pretty cool skin benefit, but it doesn't actually mimic cosmetic efficacy. Because if you think about it in terms of penetration, applying on an open wound versus healthy skin, very different skin scenarios. So are you actually getting the same benefits? it was really hard at the time. And so I was just wanting to mention exactly what Gloria said. It's like, it's actually amazing how much more data we have now on this realm, when at the time when we were looking at it as a group, all of us were kind of like, okay, where are we going to start here?
Yeah, because when we started Chemist Confession, it was pretty trendy. We get a lot of questions that are like, how does that translate to topical? We're like, yeah. I don't know yet. But we might have more insights now. It's been a few years. So let's take a quick break before we jump right into it.
Speaking of Centella, we have to talk about and put the spotlight on our actually bestseller, Aquafix. This is our soothing, hydrating water gel. In addition to our strategic blend of humectant hydrators that we use that includes glycerin, hyaluronic acid, and the NMF sodium PCA, we actually do include 0.5% maticasticide and azaticaside.
0.5% maticasticide azaticaside is a very potent dose of the soothing compounds derived from Centella asiatica. This helps calm your skin from everything it deals with on a day-to-day basis. Mm. And I have to say, as a chemist working in this industry, part of my job is to test new products pretty regularly.
A lot.
Yes. But as we are swapping out products, doing our tests, Aquafix remains a staple in my routine. It's one of the most important products to keep my dry skin very, very happy. I use it like a hydrating serum and just day and night, every day.
Yeah. And for my oily skin, I will mention you can actually consider using this as a one and done moisturizer, and especially in humid summer climates. So I'll just use this and then a sunscreen after, and I'm good to go for the daytime. Otherwise, if you are curious about checking out our Aquafix hydrating gel, don't forget to use our promo code CCPodcast2024 for 15% off your first order.
All right.
I'm ready.
The Sika train took off a couple years ago, and there is no stopping. So let's take a...
Fine by me.
Take a closer look at just why is it in everything.
All right.
So I will say a lot of the data are around two of the compounds, maticasticide and azaticaside. Mm-hmm. But we'll still go through the entire landscape to give you an idea of, you know, what it is. Number one. Yes. I'm broken. All right, go.
Soothing. That's what you wanted me to say, right?
That's what I was trying to go for. Alrighty. Okay, to start. I found a very interesting paper that it's not big. I will say a lot of the Asiatica studies, they're not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but
still better.
But there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot we can work off of. So this one has 25 volunteers that did a twice a day application of a Centella product. One group used 2.5% Centella Asiatica extract. One group used 5% Centella Asiatica extract. Mm. This is the only study I'm going to share today that doesn't involve one of the isolated compounds. You can already tell that in the extract form, you need a lot, right? As a preview, when we're using pure maticasticide or asiaticaside, you only need something on the order of 0.1%. Whereas here, you have to use 2.5 to 5% of the extract. What's interesting is this study did a bunch of tests on hydration. But I love what they did with the soothing aspect of it.
Okay.
What they did is they induce irritation with...
Love these. Yes. So with methyl nicotinate.
Yes. So the researchers induce irritation using a compound called methyl nicotinate. And what that does is immediately when you apply it, it actually raises your transepidermal water loss because your skin barrier is like, no likey.
Yeah.
And then they apply the products thereafter and continuously measured transepidermal water loss to see how skin recovers.
Ah, very cool.
We'll put the chart up there. I will say it's a little bit confusing because the paper itself, when I got the paper, it's black and white.
Which one's a square? Which one's a triangle?
Yeah.
Which one's a star?
You can tell this chart was originally colored, so it's a little bit hard to see.
Yeah.
But I will say, if you look at the bar all the way at the top, remember, tool is a value where higher is worse. So there's the group where they only...
Positive control.
Yes. They only got the irritant and nothing else. The very bottom bar is the baseline, which is basically normal skin. They didn't put anything on it. That's your default. Yep, the default tool level. Then you see the triangle, which is a placebo. So just a very base level cream. You can tell that it helped a little bit, but barely anything. Especially over time, it's basically the same as applying the irritant by itself.
So that means that the active is the focus here.
Exactly. And you'll see 2.5% is the X, the bar with the X. And then 5% Centella is the circle. And you can see that at 5%, Centella was able to bring skin back to basically normal levels of tool. Basically 20 minutes after application.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. And so with that, they actually also looked at erythema, which I thought was a nice touch. So same thing. This is another graph you're going to have to dissect as well. But you are wanting to focus on the circle and the star, which weirdly do not correlate to the same. I don't know why the symbols don't correlate to the same product here. So the star this time is the 5% centella, whereas the circle is your 2.5% centella. And you can see how they were able to... There was a decline in redness after use, even as little as 15 minutes, it seems like. So I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. While it didn't bring it back all the way to the baseline, you can tell that Centella is helpful and it's dose dependent. The 5% one did outperform 2.5% one. I thought even though this is a small study, it's still really cool, a really good way to showcase what Centella does for skin.
Yeah. And I think just to kind of summarize, so the general realm is in soothing and how that helps with even skin concern like redness here. So I will say for a general extract like this, I feel like that's actually pretty hard to find.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So cool. We're going to move on to the pure compound studies. Mm-hmm. And this one is a classic. Mm-hmm. This one combines 5% vitamin C in the ascorbic acid form with 0.1% metacasticide. Mm-hmm. So again, we're zooming in on the very specific compound now.
Yes.
We should mention that this paper was sponsored and also on a very specific product. This is actually La Roche-Posay's Redermic C. Mm-hmm. I kind of love this study because it's small. There's only 20 people. But they actually use it twice a day for 6 months, which is really long.
Big.
And big study, big timeline.
Big timeline.
They looked at it at basically a bunch of parameters. Mm. All in all, I felt like the goal of the study was to look at it as an anti-aging compound. Mm. But to me, it's like, oh, I don't know if that would be my takeaway from it.
Interesting. All right, let's look at it.
Yeah, so they did a bunch of tests, right? They talked about global assessment of skin conditions. I should mention that this was compared with a control cream. And they just, I feel like they wanted to shoot for anti-aging, but they weren't quite sure what they're looking for. So they looked at a lot of overall skin conditions like hydration, roughness, suppleness, wrinkles, radiance, pigmented spot, so on and so forth.
I think this is one of those classic clinical scenarios where like, we're not really sure we're going to get here. So let's just test the gamut and see where do the dominoes fall, you know, exactly. So, and I think the other thing I do want to remind everyone is like, this was used twice a day. Mm-hmm. Whereas like a lot of ascorbic acid products are not used twice a day. So that was the only thing I wanted to point out.
Yeah. So after 6 months of treatment with all these assessments, they say we observe a significant improvement of the clinical score for deep and superficial wrinkles, which I thought was pretty cool because 5% ascorbic acid is on the low end of when they're usually tested. So it does feel like metacasticide having a soothe brings something to the table for sure. Superficial wrinkles is not as difficult of a claim to hit as deep wrinkles. Mm-hmm. So even though timeline is really long, I still think that's pretty cool. Suppleness, firmness, roughness, and skin hydration were all improved. So
very cool. And I do think like timeline is something, Lauren, I don't quite talk about a lot, but it can make the difference. And I think that's sometimes why I think in the last episode, we were talking about the woes of hyperpigmentation clinicals when they're not tested too short.
Yeah.
It's hard to know if you're doing much. And so this is a good example of low dose, longer timeline. Can you get these benefits? And so I think, yeah, I just want to point that out there. And sometimes time is what's really important.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about metacasticide, which is a superstar, I will say, in terms of the studies we didn't go through in detail here, like those early stage like mouse models, they're mostly on metacasticide. But we have a study on asiaticide.
Mm.
Yep. So this is a Korean study. There's 27 people in this group. They tested for 3 months.
Nice.
Still a really solid timeline. Mm-hmm. And they use it. They use 0.1% asiaticide, so the same level as metacasticide. It's a controlled study with split phase. So one side they use just a placebo, one side they use the asiaticide cream. What I really appreciate about all these Centella studies is most of them have controls. Mm. A lot of plant stuff, they will show like, oh, this is a benefit, but there's nothing to bench against.
You know, conspiracy theory, I think it's because the source company that we trying to do the study just doesn't know if it can do well against the control. That's just the cynical part of me, but you know.
I don't know if you're very off base with that.
Okay, anyway, so asiaticide.
Yeah, so in this controlled double blind study over time, they focus on the periorbital, the eye area, to show that over time it did become less rough, or they correlated with less wrinkles, and also just tighter. I will say the data verbally sounds better than what it looks like. I couldn't fish out the pictures from the previous study with vitamin C, but this one, they share charts where you can see between the placebo, the bar graph will put up on the screen, between the placebo and the Asiatica side, the Asiatica side shows a steady trend of improvement over the 8 weeks, which I'm like, wait, you tested for 12 weeks. Why is one of the charts only going to 8?
I know.
Anyway, but on the placebo side, you can see that there's that initial improvement. Which
I think they just forgot a bar. There are 4 bars here, but
they didn't label it.
They didn't label, so this black bar is just a mystery.
Yes.
Label it whatever you will.
Yes. But you can see the placebo, there's that initial improvement, which can be associated with the baseline of hydration, maybe.
Yeah.
But then it kind of tapered off from there, whereas the Asiatica site did show continuous improvement through the 12 weeks. Yeah. Then you look at the pictures.
I gotta be honest, and Laura shared these before and afters with me. My eyes got so small. They're like, I have no idea. Also, the photos don't look like they're in standardized lighting, and I'm at a loss. I don't know what happened here. On vehicle control, day 0, that's a completely different skin tone.
Yeah, so this is something, this picture I kind of squinted at. I was like, okay, I think over time, the crow's feet look a little bit less on my Asiatic side, but it's kind of a stretch, and this person looks super young.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's kind of the state of things. And sometimes when you look at the pictures, you're like, I hope the quality of the image is actually better. It's just a limitation of putting it in the paper.
Nope, that just happens.
Which does happen. So generally speaking, Asiatica side, it's promising. So the takeaway from this paper will be like, okay, it does something for skin. I would not use it alone in an eye cream.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, moving on.
I even looked at it for hyperpigmentation, which I feel like you just have to. People just is always on the hunt for something that can help with pigmentation.
Yeah.
At least that's what they are positioning us, but I still took it as this is more evidence that it's a very, very effective skin soother. So in the study, there's 23 healthy subjects. Again, these studies we know are not the biggest study, but what's really cool is they are all controlled studies. In this group, it's more middle age, average age of 40. With a Fitzpatrick scale of skin type 3. So it's like kind of in the middle of the road skin tone.
Mm-hmm. And 4.
Oh, right. And 4. the subjects applied the test material, which is just 0.05% maticasticide and a placebo twice daily. Once in the morning, I don't need to do that. Twice daily on the tan side. So what they do is when they go in, they basically induced a block of hyperpigmentation by irradiating skin with UV.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put the pictures on the graph. Basically, it's just your test site is just this brown spot.
Mm-hmm.
And you apply the control cream with no actives on one side and the side with 0.05% maticasticide on the other side. They brought them back and looked at the pigmentation level at 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and 8 weeks, and showed that right off the bat, the maticasticide side was able to take down that pigmentation level right away and was much better consistently through the 8 weeks.
Yeah, and they did see a significant decrease by 8 weeks. Yeah, I thought, so first of all, we should mention this paper is super cool because this isn't the only test they did.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did a lot of in vitro studies looking at the interaction with cells.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, they also did a ex vivo on reconstructed epidermis to kind of see the histology, what exactly was going on there. So I actually really like this paper, even though it's small, it's very cohesive and comprehensive. And I think what's kind of cool about this is that at the end of the day, I think Laura and I feel like this is not truly a hyperpigmentation product, because if you look at the histology and if you look at the general method, it's clearly that they are trying to induce inflammation.
Yeah. So the UV, the way it induces pigmentation, well, there's a lot of pathway, a lot that goes into it. And part of it is your skin is irritated.
Mm-hmm.
So their hypothesis here is it works to reduce that inflammation and therefore reduces the hyperpigmentation development over time.
Yeah, especially in these general skin types that are more prone to this type of hyperpigmentation and tanning easily. So I do think that, I don't know, I think it's a, think of this more in terms of mechanism as like a, the hyperpigmentation is more secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
It's more a remove step than actually, you know, like in our previous episode talking about kojic acid as a tyrosinase inhibitor as an actual mechanism. So hopefully that clarifies that a little bit.
Yep. And that basically sums up some of the studies we want to go over. This is actually really exciting for me because we feel like while the origin story of it being in wound healing and whatnot could be pretty cool, the question always looms over us. It's like, well, does it work on healthy skin? Does it work on normal skin? Basically skin that's not a gaping wound on your head.
Yeah.
And it turns out that they've done a lot of work since the popularity took off. So it's absolutely one of the more, well, actually I will say it's probably one of the most proven soothers, right? All these studies are positioned and tested in slightly different ways, mm-hmm. but it works in all these angles. They are small, but I will say it's a lot better than a lot of other soothing ingredients we see out there.
Totally. So and, with that.
Sorry, I almost want to throw Ella under the bus a little bit here because it's one of those like age old soothing ingredients, but the testing is not even this robust.
No, not even a little bit. That's so true. So with that, we're in the final segment. We are going to talk about using Centella in your skincare routine and Centella products. But first, let's take a break.
Yay, break time.
All right. It's your animal fun fact of the day. This is your trivia corner. And today we're going to keep learning about owls, Gloria.
I did not know I signed up for an owl seminar, but
no,
yay.
No. All right. So today is about the great horned owl. I will say this owl is probably the it's the iconic owl. It's the owl that is all in all of the artwork and storybooks and whatnot. This is the owl, guys.
The owl.
All right. So what's pretty cool about this owl is about 2 feet tall. It has a wingspan of about 3 feet and larger. So it's quite big. And weirdly enough, they mentioned their talon size from talon to talon is about 20 centimeters.
That is huge.
Pretty huge. Actually, let me
that's
just
like the
show
size on my foot.
Yes. So I'm going to show you a picture of here's the wingspan around three humans releasing it into the wild. I also love the face of the owl. It's like, I'm out of here. Anyways. So, but anyways, given all that, how much do you think this owl weighs, Gloria?
Owls must be pretty light, right? So, okay. So this is a size about half of me, right? Wow, that's a really big owl.
Maybe been like this. Like,
okay.
2 feet.
Okay. 2 feet.
Wingspan of like this.
I think maybe it weighs about the same as my cat.
Okay.
Thinking like in terms of density, probably half of a cat. So okay. Maybe it's like 10 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, fair, but it's actually like 3 to 5 pounds.
That is so light.
My current baby is 16 pounds. when she came out with 6 pounds, I mean, it's like, you know, much bigger. Think about wingspan, and it's like 3 to 5 pounds. It's so wild to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, some other interesting fun facts here. They take out some pretty cool prey. So they hunt things like falcons and osprey.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They do hunt, obviously, mice and all of that, but they can also
birds of prey, huh? Wow. Mm-hmm.
They even hunt crows. And apparently, you can sometimes see crow mobs. So like really pissed off crows going at something. Most likely, they're trying to piss off a owl, and they're like harassing the owl for hours. Because they know that this dude's trying to eat me.
Wow.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And the other thing is they do live a pretty long life, an average of 25 years.
Wow, solid. Yeah.
So anyways, that's the great horned owl.
Yay, owl seminar part two.
And next week we'll be snow owls.
We'll go from the biggest owl to the smallest one,
like,
to the whitest one, to the darkest
one.
We
gotta shut this down. No, no more, please.
Welcome back to Chemist Confessions Podcast, a pop-human conversation of all the owls in our lives.
Gloria's gonna unhook my mic.
We're going back to Parasites next week.
All right. Okay, we're gonna wrap this up. Shopping for Cica.
Yep.
All right.
It can be a little bit wild. Despite it being one of the more better evidence plant extracts out there, this is the type of products where we definitely encourage everyone to take a quick look at the ingredient list. We will weigh products that feature actual madicassocyte and asiaticocyte way higher than anything else. Sometimes you might see the acid forms like madicassic acid or asiatic acid. We didn't talk about it in this episode because they are just simply not as well studied as compounds. These studies don't really exist.
Mm-hmm.
So even in terms of isolated compounds, metacassocyte, asiaticocyte.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking at a product that only has an extract form, make sure it's as high up on the list as possible. Yeah. Again, one of the earlier studies we shared in this episode features 2.5 to 5%, which means if you're looking at a product that has that level, it should be in that second or third spot on the ingredient list, at most fourth spot.
Yeah.
But if you only see it somewhere like here, like down the road, if you have to squint to find the extract, it's probably not high enough.
Yeah. And I do have like one little struggle slash gripe. K-Beauty loves this ingredient, mm-hmm. but I have a really hard time figuring out just how much and if that amount is significant.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say, like Gloria said, it's super popular. There's a lot of essences, toners out there, a lot of stika stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in Asian skincare, that is really hard for us to suggest. But I mean, it's a hard category in general. So I just want to mention that, like, if you find yourself kind of struggling with shopping for this, especially in the K-beauty realm, you're not alone. I also have that issue too.
Yeah, for sure. So we just want to share a couple products that does have more transparent percentages. Remember, most studies are done at 0.1%. I will say some of the more old school wound healing studies that we didn't have time for in this study, in this podcast episode, looked at it more at the 0.5 level. So that's why in our Aquafix, we have a combined level of metacassocyte, asiaticocyte of 0.5%. And this blend is more metacassocyte heavy, but it's over 0.1% for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I do, like Victoria mentioned, it's really popular in K-beauty, and it can be really hard for you to decipher, like, okay, so which Sika product is good in K-beauty? The brand Apu is out.
Apu.
Apu?
Well, put me on the spot, I don't know.
But they have a Sika cream that I will say, in terms of metacassocyte levels, a lot more legit than
Dr. Oh, sorry. We went there.
Yeah, well, because I mentioned it because they have a very similar packaging type, so it almost feels like it's positioned as a competitor. But they actually have a whole slide that's like 0.2% metacassocyte, twice as much as it used to be. And that's great. I think these two products are a great place to start.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention that they have a whole line of metacassocyte, but the cream is more of the star with more backing. So
that's a good tip.
Yeah. So I recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
La Roche-Posay Cicaplast and Redermic C are also classic ones mm-hmm. that use the metacassocyte form mm-hmm. of it. Like we mentioned, the Redermic C version actually has a clinical test on it
mm-hmm.
in combination with vitamin C. It's also a solid one to look at.
Totally. And finally, if you're wondering about how to use this in your routine, it can come in a lot of forms. I think in the Dr. Jart line, it's like in an oil and a cream.
Spray.
Literally in every product format. So if it's water-based, just a reminder, sprays, serums, use that earlier in the routine. Our Aquafix is a water gel. We always recommend using that first. If you're looking at creams, these are going to probably come in the middle to later half of your routine. So hopefully that gives you a guideline of where to start. Yeah.
That's it. Yay! That wraps up this episode. A plant thing that's not very depressing and low in data. And then we have to extrapolate from 10 in vitro studies.
Yeah.
So bueno.
This is not one of those sneak attacks where it's about rice stuff and ends up not being about rice stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So that's it. Where can they find us, Victoria?
You can find us on our website at chemistconfessions.com. You can write to us with your burning skincare questions at info@chemistconfessions.com. Check out our Instagram, chemist.confessions. Check out our stories where we poll you guys for the questions that shape all of these episodes. And we are also on TikTok, but don't DM us. Chemist Confessions.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.